And thank you for joining us today for A Sleep Pill, the podcast where together we will dive into the complex world of sleep in plain language. This program is sponsored by the Sleep Neural Lab. Welcome back to The Sleep Pills, the podcast brought to you by the Sleep Neural Lab. I'm Dr. Cesar Chicharro, a clinical psychologist and your host. Today, we are dedicating a full-length deep dive in a topic that affects millions across the world, depression and sleep. Most people think of depression as sadness or low energy, but one of its most pervasive and disruptive symptoms is sleep disturbances. And in many cases, poor sleep itself can act as a risk factor for developing depression. So, which comes first? The sleepless night or the low mood? And how do we untangle them? To explore this complex relationship, I'm joined by Dr. Julio Gonzalez, a psychiatrist with extensive experience in management of mood disorders and sleep medicine. Welcome back, Julio.
Thank you, Cesar. It's a pleasure for me to be here, and I am really glad we are dedicating some time to this topic. People often don't realize that poor sleep isn't just a symptom. So particular sleep patterns actually can precipitate or sustain a depressive episode. And of course, sleep changes are often a symptom of that thing that we call depression.
Yes. And I would love to start by framing the big picture. What does the clinical data tell us about how tightly sleep and depression are linked?
Well, we certainly have a very robust data showing a bidirectional relationship between sleep and mood. So chronic insomnia increases the risk of developing major depressive disorder. But on the other hand, a high proportion of patients with depression report sleep disturbances, and they are not limited to only one thing. So insomnia, hypersomnia, early awakenings, non-restorative sleep, all can happen. So I would like to emphasize that it's not only insomnia.
That's really interesting, Julio. And I think there is a huge difference between, you know, the sleep patterns between the unipolar and bipolar depression.
Many times we see that patients with bipolar depression have hypersomnia. People can sleep for long hours, sometimes 10, 12 hours or more, but still wake up feeling exhausted. Also, an excessive time in bed may precipitate a depressive episode in certain people, in certain susceptible people. And changes in sleep can be an early warning sign of some affective disorders. In unipolar depression, we see many times early morning awakenings and difficulty maintaining sleep. But of course, to classify patients with unipolar depression or bipolar depression only based on the sleep characteristics is not possible at this time.
That's very good to know. And let's get technical for a moment, Julio. What's happening in the brain? I'm talking about neurochemically and structurally that link depression and, you know, mood disorders and sleep disorders in general.
There are disruptions in many systems like the HPA axis. There is an increase in nocturnal cortisol secretion with changes in REM sleep regulation. Depressed patients frequently get into REM very quickly, what we call a reduced REM latency. They also can have an increase in REM activity, in REM density, or they can have REM instability, which it is very fragmented. All of that is associated with more negative emotional content in dreams, with less effective emotional processing and emotional regulation overnight.
And that's crucial. People think and often say, I drink more when I am depressed, and assume that's a good thing.
Yes, but when REM is dysregulated, those dreams can be very intense and disturbing. And instead of having an emotional resolution, people can have more distress. We know that a worse mood at nighttime increases the risk of frightening nightmares, and those frightening nightmares increase the risk of worse morning mood. So it may become also a vicious cycle. And all these happen against a backdrop of altered serotonin and melatonin levels.
That is correct. Many times patients develop maladaptive coping mechanism around sleep, fearing about bedtime, even trying to avoid it. Sometimes they look for help in the use of alcohol or other substances. And of course, sometimes pharmacological treatment is needed, but did you combine it with some form of psychotherapy, Julio?
Yes, absolutely. I always combine pharmacological support with some form of structured behavioral interventions. So CBTI is the gold standard. It helps reestablish consistency, targets some helpful beliefs and thoughts about sleep, and gradually rebuilds healthy sleep patterns.
I often work with patients using behavioral activation too. Depression shrinks the day. People stop going out, stop moving. That reduces sleep drive.
Exactly. The less structure you have in the day, usually more problems you will have at night. So the body needs a certain rhythm. So even a short while of morning light and movement can help resynchronize circadian rhythms, and of course, avoiding naps that would reduce the sleep drive is also very important.
Oh, that's really interesting, Julio. And what role do dreams and nightmare play in your clinical work with depression?
Well, nightmares, especially trauma-linked ones, can perpetuate insomnia and can increase emotional dysregulation. In those cases, imagery rehearsal therapy or imagery restructuring therapy, it is also called, can be very helpful. We work on changing what is happening on the nightmare, so re-scripting it and replacing it with safer, frequently even phony version of what happened. And it is effective in PTSD and also in other kind of disorders like nightmare disorders.
That's fascinating. And what's your approach when medication is needed?
Well, the first thing is that it should be tailored carefully. So SSRIs, serotonin selective reuptake inhibitors, usually are the first line of treatment. Of course, if insomnia is prominent, I might opt for one of the antidepressants with a prominent sedative effect, many times at very low doses. If hypersomnia is the dominant factor, sometimes we use more activating medication, and it might help that way. I usually avoid sedative hypnotics as first line, except for very short-term use and under very tight supervision. But of course, I think it's worth mentioning that in trauma-related issues, they might even make the symptoms worse and might make this process to perpetuate.
Oh, interesting to know too. And how about long-term recovery? Does improving sleep correlate with faster and more sustained remission?
Yes, there are multiple studies that show that patients whose sleep normalizes during treatment, especially if it normalizes early in treatment, have less risk of relapse. While the persistence of a sleep issue might be a sign of higher risk for persistent mood problems, for relapse, and for other disorders.
That's a powerful argument for integrating sleep-focused care into mood treatment.
Exactly. Sleep is not secondary at all. It is central. If we ignore sleep, we risk patient recovery.
Let's wrap up. What would you say to someone listening who's been sleeping poorly for months and is starting to feel low?
The first thing I would say is don't wait. Don't assume it will go away by itself. So seek support. Start by speaking to your doctor, and take care of your sleep. Build up a structure into your day. And remember, sleep is a doorway to recovery.
Well, thank you so much, Julio. Very interesting conversation. To our listeners, please share this episode, leave a review, and tune in again. Thank you for listening to us today. If you wish more information about what we discussed in this program, you can contact us at info@sleepneurolab.com. You can also leave a rating and review to help others find this podcast. And remember, sleep well, live healthy, and be happy.